Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
State player on 720 WGN. So this is an engrossing tale of gangs and organized criminality, which began in the Frontier Saloon situated in the marshy flats of Chicago, the future world class of mid-continent gangland Chicago. The new book recounts the era of parlor gambling, commercialized vice districts continuing through the bloody prohibition, bootlegging wars, failed reform movements, the rise of post-World War II juvenile criminal gangs in a chaotic, racially divided city. And the new book explores the changing patterns of criminal behavior, politics, gangs, youth crime, and the failures of reform in its historic totality. Now, author and historian and journalist Richard Lindberg joins us this morning and to talk about the journey through the decades of the troubled past, to delve deep in the evolution of street gangs and organized violence in Chicago. Good morning to you, Richard.
Good morning, Dave. How are you?
I am excellent. Fabulous book, and I know you've written so many about Chicago and in the Windy City. You know, over the first 50 years of this city, around 1870 to 1920, our population grew from about 300,000 to about 2.7 million. And with that, crimes and gangs rose as well.
Yes, this is not a new problem. And it dates back to before the Civil War. And I suppose one could say that there have been criminal gangs in human history back to the time of the ancient Egyptians. It's not a new phenomenon. It's been reported that there were organized gangs of criminals in Illinois long before the founding of the city. You could go back to the early 1800s and find them scattered throughout the state. It just kind of has crystallized in Chicago to an amazing degree over the last 50 to 60 years in the city. I think per capita, Illinois has the highest percentage of gang members per 1,000 people of any state in the country. I believe the number is 8 to 11. We have currently an estimated 100,000 members, and that takes in hardcore gang people all the way down to associates spread throughout the metropolitan area and all the counties. It reaches into almost every community in the city. And it didn't happen just overnight. It's taken root through many transformations before the Civil War, starting really with the liquor and gambling business and the paths to riches that were carved out of those two industries.
Well, I'll tell you, you talk about the transformations in the city. History has shown, obviously, after tragic events, crime runs rampant, which is what happened after the Great Chicago Fire. You know, you talk about so many milestones over time, and you break it down by different areas of the city. It's so well done. And, you know, what happened after the Great Chicago Fire, temporary housing was built, which ended up where the poorest lived. And there was, you know, elevated crime and gang violence was rampant then, too.
You know, you can really trace the current problem back to the post-fire period, because Chicago was essentially segregated between the haves and have-nots, and you created pockets of poverty on the west side, the south side, and the north side. Because of the geography of Chicago, it's the downtown area, the business district, is essentially cut off to the entire city. And if you want to get into downtown from the north and from the west, you have to cross the bridge. The only way to get into downtown via land is through the south side. And in this way, well, the Chicago Relief and Aid Committee, which was a social agency founded after the fire, they were able to segregate the poorest element of the population across the river and to the west and to the south and then gradually to the north side. And it really began with very cheap, temporary wooden housing that was built in the Maxwell Street District, points on the west side, going even on the north side, west of Orleans Street, which was then called Market Street. And I call this barracks of poverty. You herd together people of that don't have a whole lot of resources. You put them in slum housing with very poor sanitation, very poor avenues of recreation, and gang formation is inevitable. Compounding that is the arrival of so many different immigrant groups from Europe and around the world, and there's a tribalistic identity that occurs, and self-protection. Many gangs were formed on a basis of self-protection. One ethnic group goes to war with another ethnic group, and they begin to divide all this territory into little fiefdoms, and hence Chicago becomes one of the most ethnically segregated cities in America. And then, of course, as the ethnic groups, that identity begins to meld away in the 20th century, it's replaced by just terrible racial divisiveness, but along the same pattern.
What type of crime was common in the early days? What kind of crime was there?
Well, in the frontier period, and I identify that as the mid 19th century years, boy gangs would form, and they would steal items and sell to junk dealers. Just what I call disorganized crime. Gangs of youth who were trying to make a few pennies would steal scrap metal and supplies and sell them to junk dealers around the city. Then later, older kids would form home invasion gangs. Home invasion was very prominent during the time of the Civil War and afterward. Millionaire's Row was an area called Terrace Row. It was on right along Lake Michigan, just a little bit south of Monroe. And many of the residents that lived in that very fine area would often be invaded at night. These gangs grew more sinister and more prominent, especially on the west side. What I did in the book is I identified the books into subcategories. You had kid gangs. You had political gangs that served the necessities of sustaining certain politicians during election time. They would reward people with jobs and intervention in police matters. And these were older gang people. We had several of them, notably the Market Street Gang on the north side of Chicago. And then on the south side, you had the formation of what we call social athletic clubs that were usually tied to ward politics. They were based upon the notion of recreating and having organized sports programs, and many of them were very legitimate in that purpose. You had maybe several hundred of them scattered around the city by ethnicity, Irish, German, Polish, Bohemian, etc., and they would play each other in city leagues, but more often than not, there was a criminal element attached to it, and there would be riots and street fighting between these organizations. Then, of course, you had the more formalized organized crime, which kind of spawned out of the kid gangs. You had it was certainly manifest during the Prohibition era, and the opportunity that was provided through bootlegging and Prohibition.
Now, one of the things you talked about, a newspaper called the Chicago American, which is on around the turn of the century, which highlighted. And forgive me, but I always heard the Three Stooges talk about they were slipping someone a Mickey, and pretty common in Whiskey Row at the time. You would slip something in their drink so you could rob them. I mean, that was part of the
That was the Lone Tree Inn, and Whiskey Row was directly across the street from where the Harold Washington Library stands today. And the curious thing about this whole dissolute area filled with saloons, bordellos, gambling dens, and all kinds of dissipating behavior was the fact that there were traces of it that lasted well into the latter half of the 20th century. I don't know if you were in Chicago back in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, but that whole area coalesced into a burlesque, adult bookstores, pawn shops, and the imprint and the visual presence of that from the 1880s lasted all the way up until the Harold Washington Library was built in the 1980s. And that beautiful building, of course, arose on the bones of what was a very terrible crime area.
Well, then, of course, here comes another transition. Here comes Prohibition, which led to a whole other crimes and gangs in town.
Well, Prohibition gave birth to modern organized crime gangs. There's always been a temptation to say that Al Capone and organized crime started with January 1st, 1920, and the dawn of Prohibition. That's not true. All the pieces were in place from the 19th century moving forward. Prohibition gave the gangs an opportunity to organize systemically along the lines of corporations, moving into territories, taking over operations, having a formalized chain of command. The Volstead Act, noble intent of curing people of alcoholism, and the intent was good because alcoholism and drinking accounted for a majority of the homicides in Chicago for so many years. It had broken up families, and today we kind of look at it as a ridiculous notion, but there was some validity to it in the sense that it was destroying the fabric of society, but they could not possibly understand the ultimate consequences of depriving people of the liquor that they wanted. It was a universally unpopular law, and liquor became contraband, and there was money in it. Former burglars, former strong-arm robbers, former members of street gangs formed the nexus of organized crime. For example, there was a gang on the west side in the Little Italy community called the 42 Gang. These were just a gang of young thugs and terrorists. They were stealing automobiles. Many of them were committing sexual assaults in the community. Just kind of a rough gang. But out of that gang came Tony Accardo, Sam Giancana, Sam Teets, Battaglia, Mad Sam DeStefano. The leaders of the Chicago mob in the 1940s and 50s started as a kid gang, and they were assisting the Prohibition gangs during the 1920s, kind of as a junior kind of subgroup that would emerge from the streets. So Prohibition really had a profound impact, not only in Chicago, but upon American history.
Well, it's funny, you mentioned this in the book, too, that in the late 1930s, you know, the Chicago Tribune claimed that criminals from 14 to 23 displaced the Prohibition gangsters and parolees of the leaders of Cook County crime. So that's where you have a very young start. You talk about the 1950s, about kids growing up in single-parent households. It's post-World War II in a lot of cases. It was just mom left or whatever, and there was no supervision after school, which gave them nothing to do, and it spurred crime and formations of new gangs around town.
Beginning in 1960, sociologists have kind of traced 1960 as the real spike upward in the divorce rate in America. Of course, following World War II, with the return of all the GIs, life in America had changed. Unemployment was rampant in the post-war period. Men were coming back to very little opportunity. Many of them drifted into the criminal world. Alcoholism began to really spike upward after Prohibition and the war had ended. There was some affluence. People were moving out to the suburbs. And juvenile delinquency begins to rise all over the country. I've often strongly believe that the popular culture often has a lot to do with it. And I talk in the book about the rise of television and rock and roll. And, you know, we kind of laughed in those days about old folks who criticized rock and roll and it was the pathway to the devil and that whole thing. You know, and having grown up in the rock and roll era, I thought about that. And maybe in some respects, maybe they were right to a certain degree, because the words and lyrics of many songs encouraged aberrant behavior and freedom and just break all the rules in sight and do whatever you want. And I think in a way, the loosening up of society in the 1950s and the 1960s contributed to the rise of street gangs and indirectly to the problems we encounter today.
Well, it's funny you say that, because throughout this entire book, you see cycles. You see cycles over 150 years, and you talk about the music of the 50s and 60s that, you know, we were talking about, you know, that it was right, music of the devil and so forth. Of rap music and everything else today, when you listen to the lyrics of some of these songs as well, I mean, we're going through the same thing really from a music perspective than we were 50 years ago.
That's very true. And the lyrics today are far much more troubling and damaging, I think, than they were back in the 1950s. But that's not to say that the 50s lyrics were any different. And in many respects, it encouraged premarital sex. It talked about shucking responsibility, and in one particular song, the words still ring loud, and I put it in the book. That's what you get when the going gets good, referring, of course, to children born out of wedlock and the abandonment of fathers and kids growing up in single parent households, running in the streets. It's all about peer acceptance and peer identity, and so you run with people that you perhaps shouldn't. You form little kid gangs, and later on, of course, it progresses into organized criminality. And it happened, as I say, not only in the troubled neighborhoods. It happened even in the best neighborhoods. Gang activity in the far northwest side of Chicago in the 1950s became a very big problem. Kids from affluent households, kids that had come out of homes where the parents took care of them, attended to them, and loved them very much, still drifted into this. And who do you blame? Where do you point the finger of blame? If not, in some respects, to the defiance that was encouraged by media, not just rock and roll, but by comic books, by literature, by the gradual rise of drugs. I mean, there's just so many contributing factors.
Well, so here we are 150 years later of gang activity in Chicago, and just last week, 9-year-old Tyshawn Lee walking to his grandmother's house, lured into an alley, executed. And from the words of, Father Flagger from St. Sabina's, Police Superintendent McCarthy, probably the most abhorrent, cowardly, unfathomable crime that has hit a new low. Have we really made progress?
No, I don't think we have. I mean, we have applied the same solutions that sociologists, reformers, organizations such as the Boys and Girls Clubs of Chicago had applied 50, 60 years ago. The patterns, nothing is really new except that it has just ratcheted up to a much higher degree. The violence today is far more prevalent than it was back then, but the same root causes and the same kind of attempts to cure the problem have always been in place. There were some in the 40s and 50s, they would set up a boys' clubs in various neighborhoods because, one, give the young men a place to congregate as opposed to standing outside of a candy store or a drug store, and give them recreation. And that would work for a while. And yes, there would be a dip in crime, but it would then again rise. It was like the waves on the sea. It would go up and down and up and down, sure, over time.
Author, journalist Richard Lindberg, in his new book, Gangland Chicago, Criminality and Lawlessness in the Windy City, available wherever books are sold. It's a great book, folks, and it's an absolutely great read. Visit your local bookseller and support a small business today as well. Richard, again, fascinating book. Thanks so much for joining us today.